This is the Podfather. It has been brought to my attention that you are not listening to all of the shows in the Nerd Podcast Mafia. Now I have to ask, what have I done to make you treat me so disrespectfully? Don't you realize that these shows, Dinner and the Podcast, Superhero Speak, So Wizard Podcast, Cult 45, Open All Powers, Not Another Nerdy Podcast, Fans on Patrol, and Nerdtastic 4 are bringing you the entertainment that your ears cannot refuse. I implore you to check out all of these shows, these wonderful shows in my mafia. Thank you.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people, right? You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm
Don't
sure somebody's written that
quarter
one
quarter pounder with cheese in France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice that my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And JD.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have yet another great guest with us this week. This is quickly becoming the year of interviews, and we love it, because we love talking to creative people. And our guest today is the creative mind behind the independent book Xenoglyphs, and he's here to tell us all about it and his Kickstarter for it. So please welcome Omar Spahi to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So off the bat, just real quick, because then we normally ask, like, how you got started and stuff, but I have to tell you, I watched the video for Xenomorphs. I'm sorry, not Xenomorphs, Xenoglyphs. And I loved the video that you did. I loved the animation. So I needed to ask, was there some kind of cartoon project that didn't pan out? Or was that something you specifically did for the Kickstarter?
So right now, it is we've taken Xenoglyphs. So, you know, Xenoglyphs is something I came up with a while ago. It's been just an idea of mine for over 5 years. And since then, I've hired an animation company to do like a teaser trailer. So we took it and we shopped it at Netflix, Nickelodeon, and right now they're still shopping it at a few other places to turn it into an animated series.
Cool.
So the plan is to jump into that medium, hopefully as soon as possible, but it's a process like everything in life, and it's just something I'm just so passionate about, and I think it was always meant to be an animated series. It just started as a comic book because I love comics.
Cool. It struck me because, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, it's very 90s, and it kind of reminded me of Captain Planet, the animation style.
Netflix said the same thing, and that's why they didn't pick it up, because they said they liked the idea. It was just 90s for them.
Oh, okay.
Because of that. That was what they said. So it was, I think they were looking for something more along the lines of like 3D animation or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up a fan of the 90s. I'm a big fan of Batman, the animated series, the X-Men, okay. Spider-Man, mm-hmm. like all that was stuff I grew up on. So I wanted to like kind of do stuff that I love. You know, for me, it was just kind of creating the thing that I wish I had as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably watch that exactly in the style that it's in and love it, you know, because you haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah,
it's the same animation they used in Project Zeta and the beginning of Static Shock and a few of the others along those lines too. It's kind of the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So, again,
I think it's easily the best Kickstarter video I think I've ever seen.
thanks. I'm happy with how it turned out, but there was a couple little hiccups along the way. We've shot the video 3 times in order to get it right, and probably spent about 3 days editing it.
Wow,
cool.
So it definitely took some time. It just it's a process like everything. I had a friend of mine who's a YouTuber who actually went in and helped me film the whole thing. So it wouldn't be possible without him.
Do you want to say a little bit? Tell us a little bit about what Xenoglyphs is for the people listening.
Yeah, absolutely. So Xenoglyphs kind of is a story of two best friends, Steven and Dom, and they go around the world, and it takes place in our real world, and they're going around trying to stop these 9 different elemental stones from falling into the wrong hands. And so Steven has his, one day his parents go missing, and he's kind of in charge of this Xenoglyph, and he kind of is on a mission to find out what happened to them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
that's the elevator pitch, right?
Yeah, that is the elevator pitch, without giving away too much. That is it. I mean, we know we're 18 issues in right now, and it's something that is so fun just because taking that comic book and really kind of taking the characters around the world and, you know, introducing a lot of different stones and having them go flashback throughout history has been something that's been really fun.
Cool. So I guess was comics something you always wanted to do?
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, I didn't know it was something I could do until I was about like 18, 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a burger at a place called The Counter, and I was sitting there and talking to one of the waiters, and he goes, "Hey man, you know, like, have you heard about this comic and that comic?" I'm like, "Yeah, they're all cool. I'm reading this one and this one." And he's like, "Why don't we make a comic together?" I'm like, "Oh, like, people make these?" Like, it never just occurred to me that I just always thought it was like an omnipotent force that just made comics, but no, people actually make them. So since I found out people made comics, I started making comics.
Yeah, that's so funny. A lot of creators have that same story. Like, they grow up reading them and loving them and didn't stop and go. It wasn't until someone said, "Hey, there's somebody who writes this and draws this." They were like, "Oh, wow, wait, I could do that."
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly. And so
was Xenoglyphs the first book that you attempted?
Yeah, Xenoglyphs was the first book that I attempted. I've been so fortunate that I've been doing this for a few years now, and I've been involved in, you know, over 10 series. So that's something that's really kind of like mind-blowing for me, is getting involved and being able to push 10 series. I know how difficult it is to get one book done, but if, you know, for me to be involved with 10 different books with a lot of different creators, it's just been something so special.
Cool. And just so people know, are these all self-published, or are you working through an imprint?
Well, some of our books have gone through Image before,
okay.
But for Xenoglyphs, it's gone through my own imprint, Awesome Comics. We've published Sons of the Devil, Hadrian's Wall through Image. We've also published Terminarch, Monomyth, Thaniel, and a bunch of other books as well. So,
and that's Awesome Comics spelled OSSM, right?
That's right. Comics. Yeah, not to be confused with the Rob Liefeld's company. Awesome Comics, which is also another Awesome Comics.
Right, right. Yeah, Rob might get upset, but who cares?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
so
there's nothing I can do about the way he feels about it, but I just did what I did.
Right. So you said you're at 18 issues in so far. What is the goal of the Kickstarter?
So the goal for the Kickstarter is taking these 18 issues that we have, and getting them out and essentially getting the book all the way done. You know, when I was a naive comic book creator who was doing his first book, I wanted to do a 60-issue series because what I was reading at the time was Chu. And Chu was a 60-issue series, and I thought Chu was so awesome. Why the Last Man was a 60-issue series, and I thought that was so awesome. And there was a lot of books that were kind of like, 60 is a number I want to get to. If I can get to 60, it'll be a hit. And I didn't even realize how much work went into making a single issue.
Yeah.
And how much time and energy it takes to get a single issue out. So we changed the goal to being 30. I kind of, you know, got the story down to where it needed to be. And I wanted to tell a complete story and tell it from start to finish, and that's what I'm doing.
Cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, PJ's kind of just done, he's the artist on the book, and he's just done, like, a mind-blowing job.
Right, I was about to ask, so you've had the same artist as well through the entire run?
Yeah, so we've had the same artist, but it doesn't feel like it's the same artist. I don't know if you've seen the Kickstarter page, but on the Kickstarter page, there's a couple images he's done.
Mm-hmm.
So we've completely remastered the first issue, so you can see what his artwork is like now and what his artwork was like then. And it's the same exact pages, just completely redone style. And so that's just something for the fans who have kind of been there from the beginning to really kind of see how far PJ's grown and really kind of get them to go, oh, wow, like the book has gotten so much better. And
right.
It's just a natural progression with artists. You know, when you work on your craft over and over again, you get better. And I feel like, you know, I've gotten better as a writer. He's gotten better as an artist. And I think we're ready to hit this this thing into a home run.
Cool. So for people listening, just so you know, the link to the Kickstarter is in the description down below. And as of this is going up, which is on Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Happy Valentine's Day.
You'll have 2 weeks left to donate. And you know, as JD said, it's possibly the best video I've ever seen for Kickstarter. I love the concept of the book, and I think people really should donate. It's a great book.
Thanks. So I got a question for you guys. Since it's Valentine's Day and all, who are you guys' Valentine?
Okay, well, this is going to make John a little salty, but of course, for me, it's my wife. Married 18 years.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Yes. No, I don't mean because John was getting salty over that. I'm sure JD's got the same answer as me.
I'm not married to your wife.
Oh, no?
Don't drag me into your
context.
I love it.
Don't even ask. My Valentine is whoever I see on Match.com on Wednesday.
They like Jack Dang like that.
Yeah. Well. Oh. Well. You know. If you want to talk that, then I think Goldschlager has to be the winner there. It's just...
And how about you, Omar?
I got a lovely fiance, but I'm actually going to a book signing on Wednesday. A friend of mine actually has a book release party, so I. This year to go support him and ask him questions about his book.
Wow, way to lower the expectations right off the bat. Hi, honey. Now, Valentine's Day, I'll see you in a bit. Is she going with you, or?
She actually got a whole day yesterday where she got to really experience Valentine's Day a couple days early. So I told her to come, but we'll see if she does.
Ah, well, that's a good woman who doesn't get upset about, you know, having to share you on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's harder. If I hadn't done something a couple days early, I don't think I would have survived. I think you would have found my body somewhere.
As it should be.
Yep.
So I have a question for you. So you're doing this Kickstarter now for Xenoglyphs, but it looks like that's not the first one you've done. You've got your hand in a lot of pies, but I came across this Code 8 thing. And I watched, you know, first off, it's got one of the Amell brothers in it. And then...
Yeah, they're actually cousins. Robbie and Steven are actually cousins.
Ah, okay,
yeah.
So...
It's a common misconception. Yeah, keep going.
Okay, but I watched the YouTube video, and it's professional. I mean, like, and this was, that video was done 2 years ago, I think, or three years ago. And it whet my appetite. I mean, it could... It's absolutely like worth like you know watching it on TV and thinking it's the start of a whole series, which I found references to you wrapping up video on in 2017. So can you tell us about Code 8 and is this something that we're going to see more of or?
Oh yeah, so there was an Indiegogo campaign. Run with Steven and Robbie, and they did an amazing job. That's how I got involved with the project is through the Indiegogo campaign, and I met the director Jeff Chan. He's really done an amazing job with the short you've seen and being on set, and I've just seen the amount of work they put into it, and it was amazing. I've done a few short films myself. I've been a part of, but this is the first one where I really felt like everyone involved was kind of a family and. No one was really like looking at the clock, like it's time to go home. It's, you know, everyone was there because they wanted to be there. And it was such a really magical experience and everyone involved really made it just like one of those things that doesn't happen very often in life.
Yeah. And I mean, you started with Robbie Amell, who played one half of Firestorm when that character was first introduced and Steven Amell, who, you know, is Arrow. And a whole bunch of other people that I even haven't gone through, but are probably, you know, should be mentioned as well. Go ahead. I mean, whatever you want to say about it, because I like it a lot.
No, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people don't know that Steven was in the short too. So he was in it as well. He actually voiced one of the drone operators. So it's a little Easter egg there for you. If you watch the short, you can actually hear Steven's voice in there.
Yeah. Nice. What else are you working on? Because apparently you are the master of good Kickstarters.
No, I got involved with that after it had launched, and I'm grateful to be involved with it. But we've done a few short films, one for our Sons of the Devil comic book that I was involved with, and then there's a another one as well. For that's the only other Kickstarter I've actually been a part of. But we finished the series. It was 14 issues, and then we did a short film for it as well.
Wow! So you're going to film with just about everything that you've been working on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as someone who's such a big comic book fan, I just think that's the natural progression, is to take comics as the storyboards and take it into that next phase, so people can really kind of get more used to it on a mass level.
Right.
Is that, I mean, how are you finding the reception for that? Given, I mean, this is the perfect time to do it because we're basically in what will be known in the next 50 years as the golden age of comic book movies, right? So, I mean, is that, do you think that's the reason why it's so easy to get your movies out or get these projects done now and move them to the screen?
No, I think nothing's easy, you know, to be honest. It's all it may look easy and the projects I'm really proud of look freaking awesome. But it's been anything but easy. There's a million things that arise. If it's funding, if it's this person's sick, this person can't make it, this person, you know, we can't get this actor or this to get done or this is taking longer than expected. So everything is a process.
So speaking of comic book movies.
Can you repeat that? I think my connection's going in and out.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So speaking of comic book movies, thanks for the segue, John.
Yeah, of course. Easy.
Just curious, I assume being a comic creator and a fan, you watch all the different movies, and we haven't got a chance to talk about, since the Super Bowl, there's been a release of a bunch of new trailers. I'm kind of curious, is there anything you're really looking forward to this year to go see?
I'm looking forward to everything. I'm like a super fan, so I'm really looking forward to Ant-Man and the Wasp. I thought the original Ant-Man, to me, was underrated. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that come out. Venom, I kind of have as the one big question mark for me because I'm interested. I like Tom Hardy. I don't know if it's going to be what I expect, you know, and Venom without Spider-Man will be an interesting concept. And then what else came out? I mean, I'm really excited for Black Panther this coming weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, the buzz around that's really good.
Speaking of Venom, there's actually, two things that I was listening to. Hollywood Babylon, which is Kevin Smith and Ralph Garman's podcast. And they said, number one, it looked like Tom Hardy the movie from the preview because, like, they didn't show Venom at all. But two, apparently there is a rumor floating around now that Tom Holland does appear in the movie as Spider-Man.
Okay.
So we'll see. I don't know. That could just be wishful thinking. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they should just because it would be it would make things a lot more smoother in a movie. You can't really have.
Yeah, what's the point of Venom without Spider-Man? Stupid.
I don't know.
how does Venom even get his spider powers without Spider-Man as the template?
It's like the conversations people had in the early 90s trying to justify a Venom series,
right?
Also.
Hey, Omar, you're breaking up a bit there, man.
Uh-oh.
A little for me.
Okay, Omar, you're coming in and out.
Yeah, you're cutting out for me, too.
Now you're there.
Good? Okay. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties.
Yes.
I don't know what you're browsing while you're talking with us, but you should probably close that off.
No, I'm not. I'm not doing anything, just talking.
hitting all those deep fake sites. Oh, wait.
What are you guys excited for? What movie trailers are you guys excited for?
The more I see of Infinity War, the more I want to go see it, like, right now. And definitely Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's just, yeah. Infinity War seems so awesome.
Yeah, and Ant-Man and the Wasp looks like they took the first movie and raised it to 11.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Michael Douglas, too, so.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and he was perfect for that. But, I don't know. I'm still looking forward to Ready Player One and The Incredibles 2.
The Incredible what?
The Incredibles 2. Like, you know, man. You know, Pixar.
Of course, yeah. I haven't even like seen a trailer for that or I've been hearing anything. When's the release date for that? Do we even have a release date?
Yeah, they had a teaser for it. The release date for it was June 15th, I think it is.
Oh man, that's coming up so quick. I want is Samuel Jackson back as Frozone? Because that's like my
yes.
favorite character.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't know. Oh yeah, they had to. Right? But I mean, the entire cast is back, which is really nice because they did such a good job on the movie before. You know, the voice acting was about as good as gonna and from there were two teasers. One was a stealth teaser. All about Edna Mode, and it had like people from the fashion industry commenting on her designs, which I don't think many people even know about that it's out there. But I saw it on YouTube a couple of times. And then there's a regular teaser trailer with Mr. Incredible and the baby and just you know a quick couple of seconds of the baby's powers going nuts.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I felt like that's, yeah, I'm excited. I can't believe it's taken them this long to do a sequel because that movie came out, I feel like, a lifetime ago. And for them to be able to go and do that is, like, super cool. And I can't wait to see how that story kind of evolves.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, the scenes in there of them fighting together is, I mean, the one scene they had with all four of them finally finding each other in the forest and then fighting together. I swear that was a template for like the Avengers. Was it the Avengers 2 where they had them all trying to protect that one thing in the building and spinning the camera around as they're fighting off all of the Ultron bots?
I remember that.
Yeah, it's basically the same scene. So. And then the only other one that I'm thinking of is A Wrinkle in Time. That's because I read the book like when I was like 6 or 7, and it's got nostalgic quality for me.
You're old.
Yeah, we've established that.
How was the book? I wanted how.
Oh, the book is.
I'm curious. How was the book?
The book is very. It's very fantasy sci-fi, like high concept, and. Very strange because it involves tesseracts, but actual Rosenberg bridge tesseract type constructs and just people coming in and out. It's I don't know. You'd have to read it. It's one of a trilogy actually.
Mm.
Oh, that's really?
Yeah, I've read that book like 10 times, but the next two there's a Wrinkle Time, a Swiftly Tilting Planet, and I can't even remember the third one right now. But they're really good, and Madeline L'Engle is an amazing writer. So you really care about the characters within the first few pages, and then it's just a very weird, strange but awesome ride for the next two books. There might even be a fourth one. I forget, but. Yeah, you got to read the books and the movie should be really interesting because it's got Oprah.
Oh, does it really? Oprah's in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow, I had no idea. I saw the book everywhere. I was at Barnes and Noble this weekend, and I saw the book everywhere. And I was like, I should pick this up, and now I regret not picking it up.
Oh, the movie. I mean, okay, let's go over a few of the people, right? You've got Reese Witherspoon, Chris Pine, Michael Pena, Mindy Kaling, Zach Galifianakis, Bellamy Young. I mean, it just goes on and on. Rowan Blanchard from Girl Meets World, Daniel McPherson, Stormy. I mean, all these people, Oprah Winfrey, of course. It's just, it's an all-star cast. It's going to be really good.
That's crazy. I didn't even know Oprah acts. I feel like that's news to me. What else is Oprah? I mean, like, I know she has the Oprah show, but what else has she, like, been in?
I think it was The Color Purple.
The Color Purple, I think, is the other big thing she's been in.
Okay. I don't think I've even seen that. I've heard about it a lot, but I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that's one of those classic ones now that you'd have to pick up and take a watch like Saturday afternoon. That she was a producer in Selma, but yeah, she's been in a few things off and on, but this is like, I don't know, this is a good one. So yeah, so those are my picks. I still want to see the rest of Code 8.
You and me both. I can't wait for that to be done. You know, just being a part of it was something really special to me. So I can't wait for that to be done and get to show it to the world.
And it's being picked up where? I mean, where are people going to be able to see that?
We don't know yet. So it's a wait and see scenario. And if I did know, I couldn't talk about it anyway. So I will let you know as soon as I can tell you.
Dang it. Okay. Okay.
You've made a new friend, Omar. He won't leave you alone.
Yeah. No, anytime. You're welcome to pester me about it all you want. I just, I can't get in trouble with that.
Well, it's just, I mean, if we go back to the current state of things, I mean, there is so much coming out now because of the interest in comic books generated by all the movies. And I guess because it's much easier to do the effects these days. You've got stuff like Kickstarter that gives people an in with being able to fund the projects. So there's a whole slew of creative force just acting out there, but it's nice to see the really good stuff start to float to the top, you know?
Yeah.
And we wouldn't get some of these things, some of these really good ones, we would never have gotten in any other age than now. With the internet and
of course,
you know, the movies, you know, blazing the way. So, when I see something like this, I want to talk about it because I want people to know, hey, you know, dude, this is really worth watching. You know, same thing with the current run of comic books. So the Xenoglyphs. I mean, what else can I say? I'm geeking out. I know I'm geeking out. I've got a new bottle of Blackberry Brandy here. I think I'll take a swing.
I love it. I mean, I'm the same way. I just feel like there's never been a better time to be alive. Like back when we were growing up, we had like a couple superhero movies, if that. And now it's like it feels like there's one every other weekend, and it's like Christmas every weekend.
Yes.
Yeah, but our superhero movies were Captain America stealing a car. And, you know, Spider-Man, like, whipping his hand out and then people behind him throwing a huge rope web on somebody.
Yeah.
A little bit better now.
That's it, you know, and hopefully in 20 more years we'll actually, you know, they'll find a new way to make it even more realistic, even more exciting, and actually stay true to the characters who we know and love.
Yeah, then Netflix will say that they won't accept anything from you unless it's beamed directly into people's brains in 3D.
Well, you never know. That could be the future, and we could all love it in the future. That's a new form of experiences.
Right. Well, and then the problem is you get oversaturated, I think, and you come up with, I don't know if you guys have heard the latest with DC. They're now talking about, they're still talking about the solo Joker movie. And now they're talking with Joaquin Phoenix to be the Joker.
And solo Joker?
Solo Joker movie.
Oh, okay.
Wait, so what, Jared Leto's out?
No. They said Jared Leto is still their Joker for all of the DCEU movies, but they want to do a standalone Joker movie with a different actor, and the person currently in talks is Joaquin Phoenix.
I mean, he's definitely shown he can be crazy, so he might make a good choice. He may not be that bad.
I don't know. I mean, it all goes back to, of course, JD's famous line that DC is known for their continuity salad.
What's that? Explain that to me.
Well, it's like the salad bar. You just kind of take what you want and leave the rest. And you want to mix them together? Sure, why not? Who cares? Like, that's kind of the way they've always run their comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't work so well with the movies.
No, it really doesn't.
No.
Okay.
I mean, it works for stuff like James Bond. Why couldn't it work for DC comic movies?
Well,
there's bad James Bond movies. No one talks about the George Lazenby movie that I can't think of the title of at the moment, but Her Majesty's Secret Service. Technically, still the same guy as Daniel Craig, but nobody, like, racks their brain thinking about the continuity of it, you know?
True.
Yeah, I never got that myself, so I'm a big James Bond fan, but I don't know how, like, they can have different James Bonds throughout everything, and, like, which one's first, which one happened when, you know?
Well, he's really a Time Lord, that's how.
The answer is, it doesn't matter, you know?
James Bond in the TARDIS, that's it.
And there goes a whole bunch of fan fiction right there you just launched.
Yep. That's it. Secret spy time traveler.
Secret spy time traveler. Oh, I think
is that Xenoglyphs too? Is that what?
that's it, James. And I'm gonna name him James Bond and have him ride around in a TARDIS because obviously that's how all fun comic books are made.
Yes. So I'm gonna ask you the typical comic book interview question.
I'm ready for it.
If you could work for one of the big two and work on a particular title, which one would it be? You know.
Well, you know, for me growing up, I've always just been a huge fan of The Flash.
Okay.
And so The Flash was always, like, my guy. So it would definitely be The Flash. And I think, you know, growing up, I always felt like there was something special about The Flash because his power is really moving forward. It's about running. It's about doing things, you know, too fast. There's so many lessons that come with The Flash that I just feel like there's so many places to go that I just couldn't think of a better character.
Cool. And again, a character who deals with time travel.
Yep. Don't get me started on time travel. I'm very, you know, there's like seven different types of time travel, and like I'm a big fan of just like one of the seven. And so it's to me like very bothersome when there's a lot of different time travel because I'm like, what does time travel even mean? Like, what happens in time travel?
It means that the writer ran out of ideas.
There's also. Like, there's good time travel to me. Like, for me, good time travel is if the continuity is still intact and they go back and change things, but everything was left exactly as it was.
Okay.
So I can give you an example. Like, have you guys seen the third Harry Potter movie?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
So, I'll give you different examples. Back to the Future, for example, is, boom, a new timeline is created, and the old timeline does not matter because the new timeline is created, and you don't know the future. Is essentially the moral behind it.
Right.
But time is linear, where if something happened, it stays happened that way. You can't go back in time and change.
Interesting.
Well, for most human beings, time is linear, so.
Of course. So I think that's, that's, unless you're Dr. Manhattan, I don't even know if he's a human being.
It's an interesting concept, and it kind of hurts a lot of time travel stories, because a lot of times, they travel back in time to correct a mistake, you know, or change something.
Of course. And I think the most important part about that is you have to learn to live with your mistakes and your whatever happened. You know, it's like, I think it's an easy out for people to want to go back and change things, but I think it's part of the human experience that we can't. We have to stay focused on what's ahead of us and move forward.
Right. Kind of the lesson from Flashpoint.
Exactly. If not, your dad becomes Batman and your mom becomes the Joker, right?
and Superman becomes a wimp, and who wants that?
I know, right? You can't have Superman be a wimp. Then you're just going, doesn't make any sense. Hiding him inside away from sunlight, that makes no sense.
No, not at all. And are you watching this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I haven't had a chance to watch this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. yet. I haven't seen, like, very much TV at all.
Okay, well, just, I've only watched a little here and there, and we were talking about it today at lunch, and they were explaining to me, basically, they jump forward in time, and then they're kind of stuck in a time loop, and they lost me very quickly when they were explaining it, and, but I said, it feels like this is a lazy writing excuse so they don't have to worry about any tie-ins with the current Marvel films coming out.
That's what I got too. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Which sucks because Marvel had done such a wonderful job of having a single continuity between both TV and the movies, you know, which like every true fanboy, I think wants that. They want everything to tie together because, you know, at that point, anything's possible and you can have crossovers all over the place and it's really cool. But I don't know. I'm still kind of sad that they're kind of separating the two now.
There's not even a separating. Like season one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., nothing has crossed over. I mean, maybe since Captain America Winter Soldier, I guess, but like the two are completely different and have been for a few years. Like there's really very little reflection, isn't there?
No, yeah. I mean, they try to do things on the show that are a reflection of things that happen in the movie, but it's never the other way around as well.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing the same thing with the Netflix shows. They mention the Avenger stuff as well, and then on the Netflix shows, and they kind of allude to certain things, but it's not a direct tie-in where you're, you know, Samuel L. Jackson walk onto the screen every episode and
right.
give some, you know, give plot points.
Yeah. Well, the closest they got was the Chitauri bullets they used in Luke Cage, right? I mean, that was almost about the most direct tie-in that we got. Otherwise, when they mentioned it went what happened in New York, it was the event or whatever. Let's not go with the happening. The event, like when they were looking at apartments and I forget who was looking at apartments and they said this one didn't get hit in the event or whatever. Stuff like that.
I think it's fun. I appreciate that because I feel like it's a subtle way of doing it, making sure you know what's tied together. And then you're not sacrificing your story to make sure that these other characters fit in. I think, like, to me, it's all about story. It's all about the emotion and telling the best quality stories you can tell. And I think that as long as you kind of are able to keep continuity, you know, and be aware of the other situations, I think it's awesome.
Right, right. Well, and one of the things that Josh Whedon had said for a long time was, well, Coulson died in the Avengers, so he never wanted him to come back into the movies and tie back in the show. But Whedon has jumped ship, and he's at DC now, so we can break that rule, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. Maybe we'll see Coulson and not, you know, from everything I've heard, it just seems like Infinity War is literally every character that's ever existed coming together.
Right.
So I can't wait.
Yeah. In fact, there was a...
It'd be so cool.
Yeah, there was a clip on YouTube. They were taking what they called a class photo, and they basically got every actor who's ever been in a Marvel film to take a giant photo together. So
that is so cool.
Yeah. So it'll
it's like 1 million by 1 million pixels, so they could put everybody in.
That just seems like it's like 1,000 people. Like it seems like a high school graduating class when you have like one of those huge photos, and you're like, I can't see anybody, but look, there's Captain America.
Exactly. and of course they did it because it's the 10th anniversary of the Marvel film.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, but was it Clark Gregg wasn't in there. That's a thing. That sucks.
Because he's dead.
They had ghosts in the Marvel universe.
Not anymore.
And besides, okay, he died. How many of them have died and come back?
Yep. Probably all of them.
Omar, what else? Like, if you're involved with a whole bunch of stuff now, like, what are you looking to do in the future? Like, what's your dream thing to do in the future?
Well, for me, I have some big plans for the next few years. Comic books is something that's really been important to me and something I've kind of changed my brand and my identity about, and I think I want to help people more make comic books as opposed to just make my own. I think I just love helping people, and it's something that I've always been passionate about, and so I think that's going to be the next step for me, is do something where I'm helping others make comic books and realize their dream.
Wow. All right. Do you have an idea how you're going to do that? Or
I have a plan right now. It's hopefully going to be start of 2019. But it is a work in progress right now. We have a business plan all lined up and a really fun idea. and we'll see if it works out or doesn't. But I think that is a, it's going to be fun. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be fun. And it's something I'm going to enjoy the process of no matter what.
Cool. That's a good, noble answer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the truth. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes you know who you are. You know, you're someone who you want to help people, help people get ahead. And that's mm-hmm. who I am. I want to help people and see other people get ahead. And, you know, I think there's a formula in the comic book industry. And people don't know it. And I think I can help bring it to light and help make it happen.
Ah. Is it a secret formula?
No. To me, it's very common. If you look at any, like, creator and how they get ahead, it is all a puzzle. So essentially, say you are a writer like myself. You want to work with somebody who has worked with DC or Marvel on an independent project and have them use their clout to get it in at a, you know, known publisher because they have clout because they've worked on a big book like Batman, Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. And it's all networking and going to these events and comic book parties where you're meeting people and talking to people, and it doesn't happen in 6 months. It takes years. I know, and I've talked to a lot of people who are like, listen, if you're in the comic book industry for 5 years, all of a sudden you know people and everyone knows you, and that's what I felt like has happened to me. But I think that's how comic books get made, and I think it's you partner with name creators on, like, great concepts, and you have a great idea, and you have it well executed, and from there, it's you start to take off.
We talk when we go to the smaller conventions like the Great Philly Comic Con and such. We talk to a lot of small creators or people who just have done one offs. Like, they had a great idea and they did the long hard slog to get to the point where they actually had a book on their table and they're, you know, hawking it at these shows and you know, collecting those people and giving them a helping hand. There's you got plenty of people out there that really love to see that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, it's like I always wanted to make comic books and I felt like it's been so hard. I felt like I've never had any help. And people have pitched me stuff all the time and I'm like, okay, if people are pitching me, maybe I can help them. And so, you know, it's all the comic book industry are comic book fans. So for me, I wanted to help people, you know, I wanted that to be the identity for me, because for me, awesome was about myself. And I think that I want to transition from being not about myself, but to helping others. Yeah. So it's been challenging to kind of find the way to make that work, but it's a process and I'm working on it.
What would you think? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was saying I like it.
Yeah.
If there was one key piece of advice you would give to someone who's starting out, what would that be?
Do it. Stop talking about it and do it. Just put your pen down to the paper, and there's a million reasons someone will tell you can't or you won't or this won't happen, but just do
it. Uh-oh. You broke up again.
Such a tease on a piece of advice because you're like,
hey, I know.
Skype giveth, Skype taketh away.
Oh, sorry. Back Skype.
Hey, are you there? Are you back?
I'm here. I'm back.
There we go.
It sounded like you were giving a nice, long, detailed answer there after you said do it, and it all was like in and out and choppy.
People are going to accuse us of having, like, obfuscated it just because we want the secrets to ourselves.
Yeah, no one can know how to make comic books. No one can know.
So you said, just do it, put pen to paper.
That was it. Which is perfect, kind of.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, there's a million excuses not to do it. You can say, I don't have the money, I don't have the time, I can't, I don't have the ID, I don't have... But as soon as you put the pen to paper, you start working. You don't have an artist to become one. You can find, go online, go into Dart, find some for free, 50%. Right, a million ways you can do this, and just make it. Did it cut out again? Hello.
Yes.
Sorry, did it cut out again?
Yeah, sorry.
It's kind of funny. I think the internet does not want you to divulge this information.
You have to roll with the punches. So, yeah. I heard that you have to roll with the punches. You can find examples online of how to do things, and just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the gist of it. I mean, you got it. I mean, when when in doubt, you just start doing it, and you figure stuff out along the way.
Right. No, that is, that is true.
You can read a book about making money forever and learn how to do it, but it's actually doing it that will make you money.
Right.
The knowledge is important, but the act of doing it is really how you learn and say, all right, this guy was right, this guy was wrong, and just do it.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. See, John, just do it.
I'm working on it. Jeez.
I know. It's easier said than done. You know, it's something that it's not something that happens overnight. It's not like an idea just comes to your mind and then boom, you have a book in your hand the next week. It's a process.
Oh, very much so. And of course, you know, too, with a comic book, then you have to find an artist, someone you can work with that you trust, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's for me personally with my books, I've, you know, I didn't always have artists who did the work, and that's okay. I found artists who like said they would, and they didn't turn in anything. And, if that happens, you have to be an adult and say, listen, you know, you have until this date to get me something. If not, no hard feelings. I'm just going to go another way.
Right.
And, you have to kind of just be an adult. Even if they have a few pages, you have to learn cut and run. If they have 19 pages and you're waiting on the last two pages, maybe you just got to push a little harder. But if it's, you know, if you're at the, if you're at the first page and you're not getting a first page or you're not getting a cover, then it's time for you to make some choices and, switch artists, which is a hard choice. You know, it's like, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. You don't want to burn anybody, but at the same time, they're
angry. Right. Cool. So one of the things you had said, I forgot his name already. The artist on, Xenoglyphs.
Yeah. PJ.
PJ. You had said PJ art style has come a long way since you guys had started. And he's remastered a lot of his images and cleaned things up and changed them around. What have you learned in the writing process?
Man, what haven't I learned? I think I knew where the story was from the very beginning. I knew what the story was about. Mm-hmm. And, if I could go back and change a lot, I would, but I am so proud of the way everything's turned out. I've learned so much. I think to make it more character oriented was something that I learned along the way. It wasn't about the powers. I wanted to take it slow and I wanted to make it as character driven and as emotional as possible. I think something is I've learned to do is really build up mystery, get the characters a sense of who they are and why they do what they do. I think that's something that's, you know, tying in both things together. I don't know if you can still hear me.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
but tying in both things back together is the reason I personally, well, I'm not a big DCEU fan. DC is my favorite comic book publisher, but the reason I'm not a big, movie fan from them is because I feel like they got their characters wrong.
Right.
You want to say that again?
Yes.
No, here, here.
Yeah. Basically all around, nail on the nose whenever it's just, let me mix metaphors, but yeah, horribly bad.
And I think as comic book fans, when we see Batman with guns, you're like, that's not who Batman is. Yeah. It's Batman, guns killed his parents. He swore off guns because guns killed his parents. It's who he is. And you're telling me that Batman's shooting machine guns because he feels like it. It's just like, that's not the character we grew up with. That's not the character that we know. That's not his moral code. Mm-hmm.
Or Pa Kent telling Clark, maybe you should have let them die. Or, you know, like Hans Zimmer doing the music for Superman.
And it really even just comes down to something as simple as Superman not smiling.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Superman breaking someone's neck.
Well, yeah.
Killing, no problem. I'm Superman. No one cares.
It's really funny that out of all of them, the one they've gotten right pretty much is Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And that's the one it took the longest to get.
Yep. I think it's funny because I felt like there was a lot riding on that one because she was really the first main superhero movie. And so the fact that they were just able to hit the nail on the head with her is so cool because I felt like it inspired a lot of girls, gave them a lot of hope, and they have somebody to resonate with and look up to. And I think that's so cool because I feel like the reason we grew up comic book fans is we resonated with those characters and their moral values.
Right. The only thing is that when we reviewed the movie, I believe I said this, but one of my fears is they didn't think the movie was going to be successful, so they let Patty Jenkins do what she wanted to do. Now that Wonder Woman was a big hit for them, are they going to be more involved with the sequel? That's what I'm afraid of.
Well, we can only pray. We can only pray to the to Zeus, Zeus, Hera, Hermes, Poseidon, Hades, Ares.
Yes,
probably not Ares.
And Aphrodite.
And Aphrodite. Always pray to Aphrodite because damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we're getting close to the end here. And one of the questions we normally wrap up on, if you've been listening to the show, you probably knew this was coming. And that is, how do you measure success?
Well, for me, success is, there's so many ways to measure success. And the down to the simplest way for me would be just, if I have one comic book fan come up to me and just say, hey, listen, I love your work. That is a success for me. Mm-hmm. There's different ways where people can say money, that can be on a larger scale. It can be viewership. It can be growth. It can be I think it's a process. And I think I'm never stopping. I never stop to learn, and I never feel successful, and I continue to push myself. But, I mean, it was just – for me, I feel successful because of the people who have backed the Kickstarter. The people who have backed it have just kind of like – I thought Xenoglyphs didn't have very many fans, and then just fans have just come out of the woodwork and been like, hey, I've been waiting for this to come back. Like, I'm so excited to see this finished. And when I get messages like that, it really means the world to me, you know, just affecting one person's life in a way and having, you know, them take the time to read what I've done is, you know, makes me feel like it's not about money. It's like, it feels like I feel like the most successful person ever.
Cool. I think that is one of the best answers. And for any creative person, that really should be one of your main focuses, right? Is getting reaching people and, you know, them feeding back to you saying, I like this, you know, I enjoyed your work. It meant something to me.
Yeah. That's the reason we do what we do. You know, it's like you can always do another business where it's, you know, you make more money. There's no money in comic books, but it's something that if you enjoy, that's why you do it and what you do it for.
Cool. And, where is the best place for people to find you online?
People can find me at, on Twitter at Xenoglyphs. So XenoGlyphs. Or on Facebook at Omar Swahi.
And of course, the link for the Kickstarter is in the description. And also, you can just go to Kickstarter and search Xenoglyphs or Omar, and it'll come up. And again, I urge all of our listeners to go check it out. At least watch the video. JD's, again, said it's the best Kickstarter video ever, which I think he's right. And you'll at least enjoy the video. But I think you'll enjoy it enough. You'll throw a few shekels as well.
I appreciate you guys having me on. It really means a lot.
Oh, no problem.
Oh, we enjoyed it. You know, come back when other stuff starts to pop. Like,
yeah. Come back when you can talk 8. About Code 8. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't say that, but no. Yeah, sure. That sounds like a good idea.
Cool. So on that note, boys and girls, thanks for listening. And as always, don't let your cake be caught in the door. Have a good week.